Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com. This podcast is brought to you by GoToMeeting, the best way to hold meetings over the internet, reduce travel expenses, save time. Just hold an online meeting with GoToMeeting. Try it free. Visit GoToMeeting.com/stuff.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh. There's Chuck. This is Stuff You Should Know, as you know.
I don't think you've ever said that the title of our podcast.
I know, I'm trying out something new.
I like that.
Let the mighty eagle soar, Chuck.
I agree.
Yeah, so have you ever heard of eugenics, Chuck?
No, because you teased me before we went on the air, and I asked you what it was, so I might add to the conversation, and you refused. So.
I refused to tell you, didn't I?
Yeah, so let's
wing
it. So
this is genuine. You really genuinely don't know. This is
I have
some
no idea.
Stupid segue that you already know the answer to.
Nope.
Okay, well, let me tell you a little bit about eugenics. It's a little history lesson, American history to be exact, okay. Early 20th century. There was a movement afoot in the scientific community to basically purify the human race, to make humans, you know, the best we can possibly be.
Right.
But to do that, we had to get rid of humans that were deemed deficient. And for those of you listening out there, I just made very, very strong air quotes with my fingers. So these deficient humans were anybody from the mentally infirm, epileptics, people born blind or deaf, mutes, and just basically anybody who...
Clubfoot?
Oh, yeah. You did not want to be Clubfoot in 1920 in America.
Right.
But this is a little-known aspect of American history. The government got behind this eugenics movement. And there's actually, I believe there's a few people alive today that were sterilized by the federal government. That's eugenics.
Wow.
It really happened.
Well, I'm glad it didn't take.
It didn't take, although it almost did elsewhere in a little place we call Germany.
Right.
Adolf Hitler actually didn't come up with this idea of, you know, the Superman of the Aryan race, the perfect race,
right,
on his own. He got it from the eugenics movement and a guy named Henry Ford, who is a huge proponent of eugenics.
Really?
Yep. Little known fact.
Wow.
Let's fast forward to the 21st century.
All right.
Right now, there are at least two women walking the planet who voluntarily had themselves sterilized. Do you know why they did this?
So they couldn't have babies?
That's precisely right, Chuck.
Okay.
How insightful of you. The reason that they did this, yes,
right,
was because they didn't want to contribute to the population and its negative effects on the environment. This was their service to the environment. They were making sure they didn't procreate ever.
And I'm sure they probably went to the press to tout this.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
It was a big deal. There was a couple of articles I read on them. And I guess what I'm trying to say is I would call that an example of eco-anxiety.
Yeah, I think it's... I would agree with you there.
Do you want to define eco-anxiety?
Sure. Eco-anxiety is sort of a new affliction that they've...
very new.
Yeah, very new. Where people have chronic fears of environmental doom in one way or the other, whether it's global warming, flood, famine, heat waves, extinction, that kind of thing.
And I don't know exactly how widely held this diagnosis is,
right?
But apparently it is real, and it's somewhat like a general anxiety disorder, where you have insomnia, nervousness,
right,
depression, that
right
kind of thing. Except it's very specifically triggered from, you know, thinking about or being presented with evidence of the destruction of the environment,
right? Or even actually, I did a little extra research for a change.
Wow.
And a lot of these folks even just, they'll obsess over like a can or a water bottle. They'll be walking down the street and they'll see a can on the road and they'll want to stop their car. Well, I guess they'd be driving. They want to stop their car just to
or
get
bike,
that can.
Probably bike.
This one lady sifts, yeah, they'd be on a bike, I guess. They sift through the trash sometimes, looking for recyclables.
I've actually done that before. I don't consider myself eco-anxious, though. It's more just like, well, this can be recycled.
Well, I've done that. I've taken something off the top, perhaps.
Well, yeah. I didn't like get my hands really dirty.
Right, but I don't make it a point to go around two trash cans to sift through them, which I think some of these folks do.
Actually, if that is a symptom of eco-anxiety, then maybe this isn't new because hobos have been doing that for years.
Yeah, maybe right.
Yeah, so maybe these are just hobos in disguise.
Right, they were the first eco-anxious.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, okay, so that's eco-anxiety. We've got that covered. And it seems like people who are eco-anxious are just kind of maybe nervous Nellies, and this is a real outlet for them.
I have a feeling that might be the case, that
because
general anxiety.
Yeah, exactly. It seems like there's general anxiety, and then emanating from that are these things that can trigger it, right?
Right.
Think about it. Eco-anxiety is new, and it's kind of developed along with our consciousness of how badly we're treating the planet these days.
Sure.
But was fear of flying around before airplanes were invented?
Exactly.
And there's also a lot of psychologists that believe that claustrophobia didn't really generate until the modern city.
Right.
And that kind of living close and all that, it actually led to claustrophobia. So it almost seems like, this is totally me opining here, but it seems like there's general anxiety disorders, and then it just kind of there's triggers for it, different triggers for different folks.
Right. Almost like you look for something to be anxious about.
Exactly. Well, eco-anxiety is the new anxiety du jour, so
right.
We should probably tell everybody, you know, what they can possibly do about this kind of thing.
Right. Well, I know that many people who suffer from eco-anxiety feel a great deal of, or a great lack of support, rather, from friends and family. Mm-hmm. A lot of times they aren't very understanding because they think it's not exactly
kooky.
Yeah, they think it's a little kooky. Or if nothing else, unfounded. Although I did notice in the article that a Gallup poll states that 36% of Americans say they worry a great deal about global warming.
Mm-hmm. And that same poll found 35% of people think that global warming will pose a threat to their life or their lifestyle within their lifetime.
Right. So I guess that's I kind of believe that as well. I believe
sure.
in global warming, and I think that it's already having some negative effects. But I don't carry it around with me on a daily basis as far as worrying about it. I think that's the difference.
Right, and I think my problem with the eco-anxiety diagnosis is that any gesture toward the environment, toward protecting the environment, that isn't born exclusively out of a sense of responsibility qualifies as eco-anxiety.
Right.
Which I kind of disagree with.
I do too.
But there's a pretty good explanation for eco-anxiety that eco-psychologists have come up with. And that basically it's a symptom or a byproduct of our increasing disconnection from the planet.
Right.
We have we've created technology that has effectively taken us out of any kind of need to be cared for by the planet, or we've at least created that idea in our minds that we have insulated ourselves from the planet through technology. We don't need it any longer except to walk on and drink the water from, and any problems we face, we can basically engineer our way out of it.
Right.
But apparently we're supposed to connect with the planet. We're supposed to feel connected with the planet. So as we get less and less connected to it, we're getting more and more eco-anxious. That's the explanation as I understand it.
Right. And one on that same note, one thing I thought was kind of funny, actually, if you want me to be honest.
Okay.
One of the things that eco-therapists will do at a rate of $250 an hour to help you cure this will be to advise you to carry around a rock or a piece of bark to connect yourself with Mother Nature again.
The other suggestion that I read that I liked was to go outside.
Right.
I would love to charge somebody $250 for 50 minutes to tell them to go outside.
Right.
I mean, how do you do that? That's awesome.
Sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't want to belittle, because it is if it's a valid concern for somebody, then who are we to say that it's not? Who are we to draw judgment on somebody who walks around in a constant state of panic when they see an idling car, let's say, or a water bottle sitting on the ground. So while we might think it's a bit silly, they might think that my fear of mice is silly.
I think your fear of mice is really silly.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, I can understand what you're saying, and I think that's a legitimate thing to point out, because however it manifests itself, it's still a form of anxiety. But this is perhaps maybe the most productive form of anxiety there is. You know, I mean, you don't want to just like curl up in the corner with your chest, your knees drawn up to your chest, rocking back and forth. Right. You want to go pick recyclables out of the trash and do right. something, you know, maybe go fight off Japanese whalers in the Arctic, something like that.
Right. Join Greenpeace.
Something. Sure. I mean, at least it motivates you to do something that has a happy end.
Right.
A happy ending.
Or just carry around a piece of bark in your pocket.
Which is really the There's least you can that. Do, you know?
Yeah. That's not very good advice, if you ask me. I think they can inspire somebody to actually make change instead of just carrying a rock.
Carrying, yeah, or bark. So there was one other aspect that I found kind of interesting about eco-anxiety was that it was largely driven by the media.
Yeah.
I completely agree with that.
Right,
I
think, and our friend Al Gore, I know, has...
Leo DiCaprio.
Yeah, has inspired with his film, An Inconvenient Truth, mm-hmm. which... was, you know, kind of frightening.
Yeah, well, as with any kind of public policy push or campaign, it has to be, the problem has to be identified, and the public has to be alerted to it. But we generally, especially in America, are fairly lazy and like to have things spoon-fed to us.
Right.
So the best way to get us to, you know, get off of the lazy boy and drop our Budweiser and, you know, maybe get out there and do something is to... scare the hell out of us,
right?
And it's a legitimate marketing tactic. There's this acronym called FUD, fear, uncertainty, and dread, and these are actually three marketing ploys to get people to do something. So whether it's, you know, saving the polar bears,
right,
or getting you to go to the Midnight Madness sale.
Right.
It's the same tactics. And I can see how, especially missing the Midnight Madness Hill, that's pretty bad. But eventually you're going to get over it. You're like, that sucks. I missed out on those savings, but I'll live.
It's FUD.
With the environment, the stakes are so much higher.
Right.
That I think if you're going to try to get people to act, you have to be slightly more delicate, maybe.
Sure.
Because... you have the eco-anxious out there.
Right.
You got to be careful with these folks.
Yeah. My wife, I wouldn't call her eco-anxious, but she does worry about the polar bears.
Sure.
Stuff like that.
Well, don't we all?
Yeah.
Ashley actually weeps every time that Noah Wiley WWF ad comes on.
And I can't even see
polar
that.
Polar bear and her cub, like, on this little piece of ice.
Yeah, it's horrible.
And you're like, what will they do? And then they both just kind of jump in the water and swim away. You're like, oh, they're fine.
Right.
Yeah, it's actually not that effective an ad, but it makes right. Ashley cry at the drop of a hat.
Yeah, I've never seen the end of that. I always just skip around.
Yeah. So I guess my advice to our readers would be, and I think I speak for Chuck as well, the next time you see a well-dressed liberal rooting through the trash and pulling cans out, be extra nice to them because they may be among the eco-anxious.
Right, or tout yourself as an eco-therapist and take money from them.
Yeah, keep loads of bark handy.
Right.
Like pharmaceutical samples.
Right.
Well, don't go anywhere. We want you to stick around to find out which article Chuck and I think has the most useful, useless information we've heard in quite some time. Right after this.
This podcast is brought to you by GoToMeeting, the web-based tool that lets you hold instant online meetings from your office, conference room, or home office with people anywhere in the world, so you can do more and travel less, which means you can save money and make more money. Try GoToMeeting free. Visit GoToMeeting.com/stuff.
Thanks for sticking around. Chuck, do you want to be the big boy who tells them which article we think has the most useful, useless information in it?
Yes, I'll be the big boy.
Do it.
Why is it a bad idea to scare a vulture? Written by our colleague Kristen Conger.
Yes, and do you want to tell everybody why it's a bad idea?
Yeah, because apparently if a vulture gets scared, it will vomit on cue.
And this vomit is not ordinary vomit. Apparently,
vulture vomit.
It smells like dead things, appropriately enough. But it also burns.
Right,
it's
like
very acidic.
Acid. Yeah.
So you should probably just steer clear of vultures anyway.
Right. I would say we say useless, useful, or useful, useless, depending on where you're coming from. Because it sounds silly, but if you ever scared a vulture and it puked on you, then you'd
find out it's not so silly. After
yeah,
all.
Exactly.
Well, you can arm yourself against this eventuality, learn some vulture psychology, how to keep away from that kind of thing. Type in, why is it a bad idea to scare a vulture, into our handy-dandy search bar. You can learn more about eco-anxiety by typing in how eco-anxiety works. Both of those articles will be found in only one place. That is howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.